All right. Thank you guys for tuning in to the Taylor Jones podcast. Today I got a special guest on, Jordan Severo, attendee of Pittsford
Rec.
No, what high school?
Five different high schools.
A big time hockey player, currently attending the college at RIT and planning on heading into law school to be a lawyer. Thank you for coming on the show, Jordan.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
we just hit the record button here. We're having a conversation about is college worth it? And I'm making the argument that I believe in most cases it's not. And Jordan's here to tell me something possibly otherwise.
Yeah, my standpoint in a nutshell is it is worth it 150% as long as you do your due diligence and make sure you're going into the right fields and determining if it's right for you. I don't believe college is right for everyone. I think that a lot of people who are in college right now shouldn't be, whether it's due to their career ambitions or their personality. I think a lot of people could do without it, but overall as an institution, I think that it is something that should not be regulated more, but maybe institute better education.
I feel like too many people are going to college just because that's what you're supposed to do. Like, I don't know. I don't know how Pittsford, or your high schools did it, but like I remember when I was going through Paul Mack, like I remember my senior year in English class, like that was the thing. We did an assignment where I was like, all right, what are you interested in? And now we're going to go apply to colleges. Like we did this my senior year.
Yeah.
And maybe 20, 30 years ago, that was the smartest move. Like, obviously, there was a clear divide between how much you made if you had an education and how much you made if you didn't have an education. Whereas I'm saying, I think that divide nowadays is becoming less relevant. It's becoming less.
So I don't think that the divide is changing at all. I think it's always been the divide that it is, but they don't take other things into account. So there's a college degree versus a non-college degree. That's too broad of a spectrum where you're with non-degrees, you're encompassing everything from the guy who didn't go on to college because he didn't want to work, didn't want to do anything in life. And you're also putting him in the same bucket as the guy who said, you know what, I'm going to go into sales and sell construction equipment and make $150,000 a year. You're putting too many people into a bucket where the college degree doesn't mean you're successful. If you want to say hardworking people versus non-hardworking people or hardworking people who went to college versus hardworking people who didn't go to college, compare those metrics, you're going to see the divide has always been incredibly thin.
Mm-hmm. So if you had a kid today, let's say you and Michelle pumped out a little baby Jordan, and Jordan, little baby Jordan is...
This is after I keep throwing up from the fact that I now have it. Scared the shit, but yeah.
Okay, so, and little baby Jordan is halfway through his senior year of high school,
mm-hmm.
and he has no, he's like, Dad, I don't really know what I want to do. He's a hard worker. You know, a great kid, and he's like, I don't really know what's next for me. What would be your advice to him?
So I think one thing that people overlook a lot is what's your financial circumstance? A lot of people don't look at other avenues. They just want the best for their kid, which is your natural inclination. If my kid says, I have no idea what I want to do, Dad, and we're, you know, we'll take middle class or middle, even lower class. My inclination, 2 years of community college. We have great community colleges, especially here in Monroe County, that prepare you very nicely and work with you to make sure all your credits are transferring over. Go do 2 years of community college, get that first half of your degree, because at the end of the day, wherever you end is where your piece of paper comes from. And I've taken almost a full year and a half of credits at MCC, I think it is now, and I've saved tons of money. I mean, that's $45,000 at RIT. So make that decision.
See, but I'm really thinking, like, I don't see the clear advantage anymore of having the MCC degree.
Getting an associate's degree?
Yeah.
I mean,
like, I think I really do believe that it's society's moving more and more. It's more centered around what experience you have, what skills you have.
Right.
Selling yourself in an interview.
MCC in 2 years, I mean, you're talking a $5,000, $6,000 investment. You're able to make $90,000 a year as a welder. You can learn that skill at MCC. Mm-hmm. I think this is a huge issue that people, I think it's a huge issue that people aren't recognizing that avenue and supporting that in our inner cities. We have plenty of people who are willing to work hard. But if you never tell someone who's grown up dirt poor, listen, man, you don't need to have all this knowledge. You don't need to have a 30 on your ACT. You can make, and I think 90 is on the higher end of welding, but you can make $60,000 a year after going to MCC. And if you're coming from that environment, you're probably going to MCC for free.
Yeah.
Then you're coming out making $60,000 to someone who's grown up in that environment. That's making it big. That's things that people never think about, and it's just utilizing those resources that you have around you. Where people think it's a 4-year college or nothing. No, you can learn incredible skills that can make you a very good living.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think necessarily just getting an associate's degree in business management is a smart long-term investment, but for someone who doesn't know what they're doing,
right?
You can take a wide breadth of classes there, figure it out without going, taking those 2 years and going $70,000 into debt at a big 4-year school, and then narrowing down your avenue.
Yeah, like I know for me, like I went, you know, I went to SUNY school for business for 4 years, and I knew that I was supposed to have an internship. Like people were telling me that, and I didn't know that I didn't end up taking one. And when I got out, I had no relative work experience. I had roofing and landscaping on my resume.
Right.
So when I went to apply to jobs, dude, I was basically a joke. Like, if I wanted to get an actual career in marketing, business, or anything, people didn't even look at me.
Yeah. So I think that ties into the tremendous failings of our public school system. Because that's something you need to be instilled with. Because people are going to tell you things all the time. People tell you good advice, bad advice, all sorts of advice, right? And it's hard for that to sink into an 18, 19-year-old. But if college kind of outlays exactly what you... Or high school does a better job outlaying exactly what you're going to need to do, or giving you alternative options right after graduation. Because I know as a 21-year-old freshman, I felt a lot more mature and understanding of the process and what I need to do to be successful than 99% of my peers who were 18. When you're coming out of high school and living away from home for many people for the first time, you know,
why I think more people need.
Yeah.
It's staggering that the numbers are actually going up. I think like 30 years ago, it was like 19% of people, once they become an adult, end up going back and living with their parents.
Yeah.
And I think nowadays it's well into the 30% of people are actually moving back with their parents. And this is actually one area where I disagree with Gary Vee. His big thing is, you'll hear him, he'll push, dude, if you have to move back in with your parents, do it. And I'm like, wait a second. I think that there's definitely advantages, and especially when it comes to accountability and responsibility, when it comes to moving out and living on your own.
Right. Well, I guess what's your reason for moving back to home would be my thing. Is it because the world's too scary and you're going back into your shell, your protective, comfortable...
Comfort zone.
Comfort zone. Or are you doing it because I have these plans while I'm home, I need to save this, this, and this to launch my business, pay down my debt until I can go buy this house. And build equity. I think a lot of people get in this rent game where they're paying $1,200 a month in rent. Guess what? That $15,000 a year you had could have been building equity in a small $100,000 home that you can get a loan on pretty easily nowadays.
Okay, hold on. So that's a whole other conversation we could have. But So I agree. I think that's a good point. It depends why.
Right.
You're saying you're why are you going back? Like, I know some rappers I've listened to, like, you hear stories where it's like they move back in and they were living in their parents' basement, mom's basement, single, you know, no dad in the family, and started building up their started writing songs just out of that, in that environment. Now, in that case, they're working their ass off. They're doing what they're passionate about. They're following something they love. But I would argue that that would definitely be the minority of people, less than 2%, whereas most people are just doing it to stay in their comfort zone.
Prolonged adolescence is something I would say is the greatest risk. And it's plaguing the youth. It really is. We've got people. I mean, in high school, you're told, you know, oh, you're pushing yourself too much. He can't handle this. This is all the parents are always handling situations for their kids.
Yeah.
And it bleeds into college, and the sense of accountability is not there. It's always someone else's fault. Colleges are working their asses off to continue this sense of someone's always there for you. You need to fall a lot of times.
Yeah, 100%.
Failure. And you need to fall on your face. And the whole idea that life is easy and life is fun is an issue, in my opinion. I was always told life sucks. And In somewhat of a joking manner, but at the same time, when you have this outlook, like, life sucks in the sense that it's going to be hard. You're going to have to fight for everything. Yep. You're going to have to scrape by tooth and nail to get what you want. It makes you appreciate the things that go well.
Yeah.
As soon as something...
And I think it takes away from entitlement.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is big. I mean, and I know I was there. Yeah. A year and a half, two years ago, I graduated entitled to shit. I thought, this is ridiculous. Why don't I have a career?
Yeah.
And I just complained.
Yeah. There's so much work that goes into preparing. The word deserved is one of the most overused words of our generation. And I think kids need to realize you don't deserve anything. Yeah. If you truly deserved it, you'll get it.
Eventually.
Yeah. It might take longer than you think, but... that kid with the internship and the job right out of college did so, and not everybody, obviously there's kids that were spoon fed and, you know, their dad made a few calls, but at the end of the day, I mean, I was very fortunate. I got a great internship. What a lot of people don't see is that took 74 applications.
Uh-huh.
That took networking like crazy and, really dedicating all my decisions around being a strong student.
And I think it's also important, like, this idea is relevant outside of internships.
Yeah.
I mean, it's relevant to how much you're making at the end of the day, your relationships, your overall contentment with your life. And one thing that I would argue is I think that sports, like being involved in a hands-on, physically demanding, challenging sport.
Yeah.
Like there's life lessons that translate, I'm sure you learned in hockey.
Absolutely.
That translate directly to life.
Yeah.
I learned so much from wrestling that copies over, like, hands down.
Yeah. I mean, when you're, I was a goalie myself, and when you let in 8 goals in one night and then you have to perform the next day, you learn something about getting knocked on your ass and then pulled back up.
Yeah.
And having to pull yourself back up many times. I left home freshman year of high school for hockey and started living with families and the
completely away from the parents.
Yeah. And that sense of okay, what am I going to do to get through this? Obviously my parents are still incredibly, involved in my life. It's not like, you know, I moved to Africa and didn't have any communication with them, but you need to learn more about yourself. And I think kids don't even remotely know themselves. Tying this all back to going to college.
Yeah,
kids
yeah.
don't even remotely know themselves before they get to college. And
I 100% agree with
when
that.
When you're spending tens of thousands of dollars a year, you should have a direction.
Mm-hmm.
Don't go don't go into a four-year university without direction. It's not the best place to find who you are. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's true when it was $5,000 to go to school 20 years ago.
It's not the case anymore.
But it's not the case. So instead of saying, oh, we need government to pay for these, it's the loan companies, it's everyone else's fault. Let's review the reality of the situation instead of trying to upend the entire institution and saying,
well, I'll be honest. I think the part of the institution itself is pretty fucked.
It is bloated. it's incredibly bloated. And whose fault is that? When you're saying we want 10,000 or 5,000 students this year coming in, and all 5,000 of those kids can get loans because the government is backing every student loan. So it's incredibly easy to get a student loan.
Yeah. Well, I think you have to remember, like, it's at the end of the day, the college is a business, and they're there to make money.
Right.
And I agree 100%. Like, you shouldn't – college, with the fact that its rates, college tuition is on the rise – it probably isn't the best place to go find yourself.
Right.
Now, if your parents are willing to pay for it and they're in that situation, fine, go for it.
Yeah.
You know, like Gary Vee says, take a 4-year vacation, because it's basically what it is.
Yeah.
But I'd agree. I've said this so many times before. If my dad didn't end up getting the house for all three of us boys, and I had to pay full price for dorms and everything and out of my pocket, I wouldn't have gone to school.
Yeah.
I had no idea. I definitely would not have gone to school.
Yeah, and I mean, we have more resources at our disposal than ever before. It's incredibly easy to get on the computer and look up the like we were talking about earlier, return on investment. Don't go take interpretive dance. Unless if your parents are saying, hey, don't worry about it, the bill's coming our way, which was certainly not the case for me, then, you know, go for it. Take whatever you like. That's the biggest lie. That is one of the biggest misconception is people tell you, study what you're passionate about.
Yeah.
No, don't.
Okay, hold on. I like where you're going with this, because this is funny. I bought into that 100% when, like, probably 2 years ago, roughly. Yeah. And I bought into 100%. And I'm starting to change my perspective on that. So expand on that. Why not?
So you have 24 hours in a day. 8 hours a day, typically. I mean, if you're going with the average American work day. Should be spent doing, and I'm not saying, you know, be a coal mine or something you hate doing.
Mm.
It should be something you like doing to an extent. But I'd rather be sitting on a beach reading about U.S. history. That's not going to be lucrative. That's not something I'm willing to put in $100,000 of student loans to just do. You should take elective classes that you enjoy. You should do this. But when you're making an investment, because that's what college is. People keep forgetting that it is an investment. When you're making an investment, you need to see return on your investment. Find what you like doing the most that will provide that return.
Okay, so I'm talking about so I think that there's a lot of stuff going around nowadays about being like, you know, do what you're passionate about and love what you do. You don't work a day in your life. At the same time, on the end of that token, 70-80% of people don't like the job that they're doing. I get messages all the time. People, oh, Taylor, you know, thank you. I mean, I don't like this, my job. A lot of people do not like the work they do. And I think that there's something to be said about making the best out of what you currently are in. And at the end of the day, a job is a job, and it can be something you can still learn from, something you can still develop skills. And what I'm trying to say is I think there's a balance between not being so entitled that you're not going to end up in – you're probably not going to find a job that you love.
Right.
You're going to build maybe a career, work into a company or something that maybe – or build a business that you're passionate about. But I think a lot of people are getting out of college expecting to love what they do, and it's just – couldn't be any further from the truth.
Right. And love what you do is incredible advice. If you love engineering or you love brain surgery, but love what you do, it's too broad in my opinion. I understand the underlying concept of it. And I think you should find something that you enjoy. I go to RIT. Okay. I could have been an engineering major, a computer science major. I don't love those things. I don't enjoy those things in any capacity. I find finance interesting. So do that. Go with what you find interesting, but you can't discredit your future income. That's the purpose of going to college.
I think a lot, like I know I was there, a lot of people think money is evil. Or like they shouldn't chase the money. I think a lot of people really, I mean, I know I used to think that.
And I believe it's a balancing act. Don't chase the money. Yeah, okay. I'd love to, like you said, I'd love to do something that was super low stress and just kind of hanging out all day. But, and you can do that if you, but don't expect to, don't go to college and rack up debt and then want to do, if you want to do something like that, just go do it.
Just go be a bellman.
Go work at the Woodcliffe Hotel.
Oh my God, dude, that drove me crazy. Yeah. Is that some days I would stand around like 3-4 hours and do nothing.
Yeah.
That drove me crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you have so much time in the day. I was trying to make this point earlier. You have 24 hours in a day. 8 are spent sleeping. That gives you 16. Split it with something that, you know, you work 8 and it might not be the most fun. Then cultivate the things that you enjoy doing.
Yeah.
We have so many resources at our disposal.
You can learn anything.
Yeah.
Online.
You like U.S. history. You like yoga. You like an interpretive dance. Learn about that on your own time.
Instead of watching Netflix.
I want to do what I love. I want to watch, you know, 4 or 5 episodes of Netflix a day, and I still want time to, you know, do my face masks and my self-care. It's great to say, sure.
Yeah.
That's not your reality, and people see people expect their reality to be the reality of incredibly fortunate 0.01% of people, because they see it on Instagram. Guess what? If that's not you, that's not your life. It's not my life.
Yeah.
And it's not most people.
No, I think I think that's hard nowadays. Like, you go online and there's someone, it doesn't matter what you look at, there's someone that does more travel than you. There's someone who makes more money than you.
Yeah.
There's someone that looks better than you. There's someone that's got a cuter boyfriend. There's like every single thing.
Well, I know we're not on camera right now. Not all of Taylor's comments pertain to me. There isn't anyone that looks better than me. But I just want that caveat put in there.
Whenever I post this, I'll have to put a picture of Jordan in.
Exactly. No, and that's the whole kind of life sucks mentality that I was talking about earlier. If your metric for someone's life is of what your life should be is an Instagram model or influencer, and you see someone on a yacht 24/7, guess what? Whoever it was, their great grandfather, their great 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 grandfather, their dad, their mom, whatever. It could be, you know, either side. I don't want to be sexist here, but someone down the road, no matter how far it is, their life sucked, and they worked 12 hours a day to then make this their generation, this lineage of their family, able to do these things.
Guess what? Only that, but the person itself who's enjoying that pleasure could have also earned it themselves.
Right, absolutely. But it's come off the work of someone's back. And that's what, I went to a prep school in Connecticut. My dad worked there, so I got to go there for free. I think that's an important footnote. But a lot of these kids, I mean, I felt contempt at the time for them. Why do they get to go to Aspen and the Swiss Alps and go to, you know, Florida and California every 3-long weekend or break? But what I've realized is that happened because one of their parents worked on Wall Street. And again, another misconception, people that work on Wall Street making all this money have it easy. Those people that are making the money worked 80 plus hours a week starting off.
Yeah.
And it might be easy now, but it wasn't always easy, and they had to put in a ton of work.
Yeah, a couple good points, though. I don't think – okay, you said something about, like, passing on a generational wealth.
Yeah.
Like, you will hear a lot of people talk about the fact that when you get handed over so much money – it actually doesn't teach you work ethic because you've just been having everything handed to you. Yeah. So I think that's something, I mean, like if you look, there's a lot of really successful people today that came from nothing. Right. I'd actually say there's more of the successful people came from nothing.
Yeah.
Because they had to build everything themselves.
Right.
Okay. That's what I was going to say.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. And I don't think that all those people that you see having fun with that money are hardworking people or ethical people or anything. I don't think there's no virtue in having money. But I think it's important to remember that kind of a lifestyle isn't created by staring at screens and going, oh, my life is so terrible. Yeah. Their life is so much better than me. It came off the sweat of someone's back. My family is very middle class, maybe upper middle class. I don't know what the breakdown is. I've never had to worry about food or anything like that. But my great-grandparents, when they came to America, were dirt poor.
Where are they from?
Italy and Ireland.
Italy and Ireland.
Yeah. Dirt poor. I mean,
I see the Irish in you.
Yeah, no, I definitely get my looks from the Irish side. But my grandparents grew up incredibly poor, both sides, or all four sides, I guess, if you're breaking it down for grandparents. They came from very little. Out of my four grandparents, one of them went to college for religious studies, and
I know they had college back then.
It was just one big schoolhouse. But she then got her master's in religious studies. But my grandpa worked, 30 years at IBM and just did his function, worked hard. And we'll take my mom's side of the family because it's a little easier to break down. But my mom and her two siblings, college was a given for them. It certainly wasn't a given for their parents, and my grandma that's on that side is the one who went to college. She had to work very, very hard to get to college. She paid for it herself. Her parents had nothing to provide to her, I don't believe, to help her go. My grandpa didn't go to college. He just started working, and he worked hard so that college was a given for my mom and her siblings. Then my mom worked very hard herself. Started off as a secretary out of college, yeah, and has worked herself up.
I think people don't really see the full extent of how much work really needs to be put in.
Yeah, absolutely.
But getting back to the social media thing, one of the things that I'm starting to say, do myself more, and I want to start encouraging other people to do it more too. Because of the Instagram culture, mm-hmm, like social media is definitely shifting our culture and where we're headed.
Yeah.
And it's almost been like, when you meet somebody and like, oh, well, what's your Instagram?
Or, right.
I mean, it's almost like you're like your own PR agency.
Yeah.
You really do try to put out the very best 1-5% of your life.
Yeah, absolutely.
So one of the things that you've seen me do is I do my best to try to, I mean, I don't get on there like depressive, like, oh my God, my life sucks. But I try to share things on a broader spectrum of experiences where instead of focusing on how am I going to be perceived as the highest class living the best life, instead, how can I share an experience that happened to me recently that other people can receive value from? Yeah. And that's why, I'm not afraid to be vulnerable. And I think that is huge because now I don't have this sort of, whenever I see people in public or I see, I'm not trying to uphold this 1% lifestyle.
Yeah.
No, it's more real. You know what I'm saying?
That's a great point, and I think that...
What do you think the major dangers are of that 1% Instagram life? What do you think the major dangers are?
Oh, absolutely. 150% is the suicide rate among young people in America. It's devastating. It's horrible. But I thought what you said about the vulnerability is so incredibly important, because so many people think they're alone.
Yeah,
with their vulnerabilities, with what's going wrong in their life. In reality, everyone has something in their life that is making them feel maybe not good enough or alone in some regards. You put out that vulnerability, people are going to share it with you.
Yeah.
And that helps alleviate the feeling of, I am so alone. Mm-hmm. My life will never get better, which is so upsetting, and it's become so prominent in American culture for our youth, and it's devastating. I don't know any other
people way to put it. People are afraid to reach out because there's an association with vulnerability and lowering your status.
Yeah, right. But if everyone is just a little bit more open about their struggles, everyone's kind of taken down a peg, right? Off that. If you see that instead of 5%, you see 10% of their life, everyone becomes more relatable. Mm-hmm. Everyone is able to exchange their thoughts and feelings and experiences in a much more open forum than trying to keep up with an image that the most popular kid in school has, or you know, the most attractive person. The more we are able to get on that common ground, the better we'll all be.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's because as this changes, I'm curious to see where we're going to be in the next 5-10 years, like if Instagram will still be around, what's going to be the next thing and how it's going to transform.
Yeah.
But I'm going to really try to make an intention to keep, and this is why I want to do more of this stuff, where people are able to listen. And I think that there's the demand for podcasts is growing.
Yeah.
Because it's real content that, you know, two people are sitting down having a conversation and sharing real stories that they had, not just this picture of artificial look at the best that I have to offer.
Yeah, and I think aside from just talking about culture as the issue and this big broad spectrum of blame, which I think is well pointed, and I do think there's an overall issue with it, but every person needs to take their own responsibility on the issue. Like you said, you post things that show you at a more vulnerable state, more honest, raw situation. And I think everyone should do that, but also be smarter than we've been. Don't follow these accounts, that a fashion account or an account that's just the showing off. Mm. Don't give credence to this lifestyle.
You're basically like you're entering that into your awareness every day.
Yeah.
And it's affecting you, you're subconsciously in ways that you don't really know.
Right. People need to think, be smarter than your subconscious thoughts. Be more aware than that. Say, I feel inadequate all the time. I feel like I don't have enough money for this Louis Vuitton belt. I want a Louis Vuitton belt. Something at some point needs to go off in your head and say, come on, I'm better than that. I'm not this materialistic. What is going on around me that is driving me to feel this way? And then I guarantee if you do that and you go on Instagram, you're like, oh, I need to stop following this. What's this one girl, Gretchen Garrity? All she does is she's a normal girl. She's probably making money off doing this stuff, but it's just an account of her shopping and showing off all the clothes she buys.
Yeah,
what is that saying to you? What, she has all these clothes. I need more clothes. Dress up, Buttercup. These ridiculous people, who and it's mostly affecting girls, in my opinion. Young impressionable girls are seeing this, and it's transformed from, I think, that whole anorexia trend that we saw late 90s, early 2000s, which was being pushed by
other sources of media. Take out the word. I wouldn't say trend. I'd say like epidemic.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was the epidemic that was plaguing us now. Now we're seeing much more materialistic image issues causing that, as opposed to skinny images. So what I mean, these people are just posting the things they have. Look, I got all this new stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like,
no, and I think a lot of people, I know that, like, I don't know, I'm curious to, you know, hear what your take is on it, but I know that, like, people close to me, like, I think, like, my sister, she's never had an Instagram. I think she just got one.
And how old is she?
Kristen, let's see, she's, you're younger than me, 21.
Oh, okay. 20, okay. 22. Okay. Well, I think that's important. She's not 50.
Yeah, yeah.
I never had an Instagram.
But, no, she doesn't, she just never has liked the whole essence of it. And mm-hmm. But I know Brandon's been on and off. I've spent time off of it altogether for several months. Let's see, where was I going with that? Geez, I completely lost my train. What were we talking about beforehand?
Materialism and how that's driving people to want to, you know, measure up and have these external...
Oh, yes. Okay, yeah. So I think people can get... We've hit at a point of extremes. Some people are like, all right, I'm completely off of it now. Or, right. All right, nothing wrong with taking a break. And there's other people that are completely addicts of it.
Yeah.
I think just like any technology, there's good and there's bad to it.
Right.
And if you can harness the good, like trying to share a good message, posting stuff that adds value and helpful for other people.
Yeah.
And like you said, follow accounts that are influencing your mind
in a healthy way.
Yeah. But in order to do that, I feel like you have to almost take a step back from an outside perspective and be like, all right, how is this influencing me as a whole, and what accounts are helping me and what accounts are hurting me?
Yeah.
And then adjust your following accordingly.
And I think that our constant stimulation that we experience on a day-to-day basis is no longer leaving time for people to be introspective.
Yeah, reflect.
Yeah. You got to take...
What are some of the things that you do in your... I'm curious, right? Do you have, like, a routine or anything that you do to, like, kind of, like, reflect? Or do you have certain habits you do? I'm curious.
I've always been fairly introspective. I'll get lost in thoughts sometimes in times I shouldn't, maybe in classrooms or whatever, but...
That's kind of easy to do.
I do...
Depending on the teacher, right?
Yeah, yeah. Some of them, it's like, bring me a pillow. But when I run, and I don't run as much as I used to by any means, but it's just important. I mean, you're constantly thinking all day. I just try to think about what's going on in my life. I'm an avid planner. It drives people nuts, especially my girlfriend. She'll attest to that.
Shout out to Michelle.
It'll drive her nuts. I want every aspect of my life planned out, and I think it's important to do that because that direction allows you to then say to then when you're reflecting on yourself, say, why do I want these things, and what do I need to do to accomplish these things, and make sure your plan's not too rigid. Obviously, you want it to adapt with you as a person and the external forces in your life, which again requires more self-reflection and saying, okay, yes, my plan was to do this, this, and this. That was a year ago. I've evolved as a person. I'm changed in some regards. What is my plan now? What do I want my plan to be now? And is it good? People are always changing. People aren't always changing for the better, though. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important to just always be cognizant of who you are. Are your decisions matching? Your decisions always are reflective of who you are, in my opinion. But do you want to be different? Do you want to be a different person? Because guess what? You can't just say, I want to be a harder working person. I want to be a more thoughtful person. And keep doing the same actions you've been doing.
Yeah. I think it's like one thing that I've started to do now. And I don't know if – did you end up filling out the survey I did? I made at least a survey.
It's fine.
Well, one of the alarming things that I got back from people was more than half of people said that they have no idea what they want their life to look like 10 years from now. And I would say at least half the people did not have goals written down on paper that they checked in with regularly. And this kind of intrigued me. Because but I'm not surprised by any means.
Right, right.
No, I mean, this is something that I just started doing maybe within the past year.
Yeah.
But I will say this. I think that part of it comes from the fact that I feel like a lot of people don't think they have enough control to dictate where their life's going to be 10 years from now.
Yeah.
Maybe that's it.
No, I think that's fair.
But I've seen the law of attraction, or whatever you want to call it, or the kind of the manifestation of where your intention is and what you're thinking about and what you're writing down, come into play a lot in the past year or 2 years.
Yeah.
And to not have what you want written down,
yeah,
you're leaving major, major, I don't even know what, a success, fulfillment on the table.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's, everyone should have something they want written down.
And fulfillment's such a great point. Fulfillment's such a strong, meaningful word that I feel like people aren't in search of fulfillment anymore. And I think that
What are they in search of then?
Instant gratification.
Pleasure.
Pleasure. Yeah. And I think that...
So the difference between what you want now and what you actually want.
Well, yeah. What's going to stimulate one portion of your mind or body, and what is going to satisfy all aspects of your mind and body? Mm. There is such a contempt from a large faction of America for the idea of family. And it's, sometimes it's subtle, sometimes it's not. But we've seen this a lot, and women have been pressured drastically to forego family. In exchange for a career, in exchange for a sense of independence that, in my opinion, is such a myth. And I think that if there was a push for men to say, oh, you gotta give up family to be wealthy and successful, I think they'd say, look at the transition from the 70s to now, the 60s to now for men. Men have learned from decades of error of only focusing on their career, maybe having a family at the same time, but not spending time with them. Maybe making millions and having kids, but not really knowing them. And I think it's a balancing act that we were almost reaching, and now there's this huge push for women to not get married. You're an independent woman. You don't need a man. It's not needing a man. It's a sense of family that humankind has needed for the beginning of time and has searched for.
You think the family unit is in a decline?
Absolutely. Today? But it's a necessity for the survival of the things we hold dear. It's a necessity for fulfillment.
I agree. Stefan Arneo, one of the guys I follow, mm-hmm. and I'm going to see him in September, he talks about this a lot.
Yeah.
The fact that more and more kids are being raised without fathers, the family unit is declining.
Yeah.
And one of the things he points out in all of his coaching programs is that the most successful guys are married men with kids.
Right.
Versus non-married men versus everyone down the line.
Right.
The most successful people by far and large are married men with kids. Why do you think that is?
That's a good question. I think that's because there is a support. And I think you'd see that...
you think it's because of the support of the family?
Yeah, and I think that you'd see married women, not with kids, but without kids, to have an equal increase in success versus single women. In overall metrics of happiness, certainly married women with children. I think that to have that support, I'm a strong believer in monogamy, to have that person to come to have that reason for wanting to be successful, for pushing yourself, to see that kid when you come home and say, this is what I'm doing it all
that's,
for.
That's what I think it is. I think it's a sense of purpose.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And to say that you don't need a family to have a sense of purpose is denying science. It's denying biology. It's denying history.
Yeah. I want to wrap this up here pretty soon, but one of the last things I want to talk about that I also noticed on the survey that's fascinated me a lot.
Yeah.
Is the concept of fear. I went through a big change in my relationship with fear, and I'm curious, Jordan, what's kind of your perspective? Have you ever had to do anything that kind of like scared the shit out of you?
Oh, yeah.
How has your perspective on fear changed over time since you've grown up?
I love fear. I've always been kind of willing to embrace it, I think. And I think I've been better for it. Like I said earlier, I left home at freshman year of high school. I was 14 years old. That was scary.
What are you most afraid of today?
Most afraid of things I have control over?
Anything. What keeps you up at night? What's the one thing that like I'm kind of scared of?
Something happening to my loved ones is definitely my biggest fear. But of things that are more that I have to deliberately face.
Yeah.
Would be not holding to my own standards. Yeah. I think is what I'm afraid of. I try to hold very, very high standards for myself.
So falling short.
Yeah. But I think that should be everyone's biggest fear, and not of falling short of some arbitrary what the guy next to you is doing metric, but of who you want to be as a person.
I think a lot of people struggle with, and I know I did myself, stepping outside of the box of what people think you should be doing.
Yeah.
And not being afraid to, like one of the big responses was, I'm afraid to do something because of other people's opinions. I'm afraid to do something different. And I just don't know. I feel like I'm stuck. Have you ever dealt with that? What do you think about that? Why do you think people are so afraid to try something new or different?
People hold a ton of stock in other people's thoughts. And that's always how it's been. And I think that in many instances that is good. I think society...
It keeps the people in check.
Right. Society's opinion of people should dictate what people do to an extent. Whether it's, following laws and rules and things like that or whatever. But to then think more at a smaller level of what the people in your class are going to think of you, what your family's going to think of you. Just remember that people are stupid.
Yeah. Because I'm just thinking back to like – and I talk about this a lot. When I was at the Woodcliff and I wanted to travel so bad.
Yeah.
But every time I would talk about it, I'd get so excited. My friends and most of my family would be like, Taylor, like you have to work. Like, you have to pay back debt. Like no one in my family ever traveled before like extensively like I've done.
Right.
Ever.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone in my – family has actually been out of the country and I wanted to do that.
Yeah.
So I had no one to go to other than books and stuff and that was a big fear of mine to step outside of where I was supposed to graduate, get a job and just work like everyone else did. That was one of the things that I battled with and this is why I press this so much and I want to help people go through this, guide them through the same thing. When you do that thing that scares you, you build courage.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And you can do other shit that scares you. But you become – it's like a muscle, I think.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it. And that actually – your experience reminded me kind of something I've gone through with a lot of people close to me. And I tell them I want to do these things. I want to go to law school. And they're like, okay, well, are you sure? That's a lot of more school. You don't want to overextend yourself. I'm taking 24 credits this semester. Oh, well, that's going to be too much work, don't you think? Anyone who discredits your desires is whether it's intentionally or not, they're discrediting you.
Yeah, I agree.
And they're saying, you're not capable of this. And to those people, you cannot, you no longer give them any stock or any influence to your life. You have to disengage from that person, whether it's your parent, whether it's your significant other, whoever it may be. From that point on, you say, okay,
I need to seriously watch my time with this person.
Right, and don't, I'm not saying never speak to your mother again, but you need...
That's exactly what he said, by the way.
If you take one thing out of this, it's don't talk to your mom. No, but it's saying, okay, there's certain things I'm going to share with you from now on, and there's certain things I'm going to let you influence in my life, and there's certainly things that I will no longer... have you be a part of because that is a deterrent for me. Mm-hmm. Knowing yourself is a big step to that, though. Knowing what you want to accomplish. And then once you do that, you have to be all in.
Yeah.
throw yourself in 1,000% and do it. And once you live outside your comfort zone, you never want to go back. Because that's complacency. And once you get that perspective on complacency, you hate it. It's an enemy. Once you build up that rush you get, you're like an adrenaline junkie.
Yeah.
Where you're like, I want to be scared. I want more.
What's the next level? Yeah. Pushing the envelope.
Yeah, I want to embrace that fear, and you ride it into your accomplishments. You ride it into that next job. You ride it into
that
next relationship.
A wave. It's like a wave.
Yep.
You want to be right on the cusp of it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let that be your motivator, because you're going to live a very disappointing life if you live within your comfort zone. And I think people, and it starts with the young children in America, get out of your comfort zone. Throw the training wheels off.
The way I look at it is, like, I think that there's a balance. Jordan Peterson talks about the line between chaos and order. It's a fine line, okay? And if you're too far into order, it's your comfort zone, okay? There's no change, no learning happening.
Right.
If you push the envelope, okay, and I like to compare it to like a wave. So the comfort zone is sort of inside the wave. Like, you're in the bay, there's no ruffles. And then the chaos is way out where the waves are crashing on top of you. It's like you pushed it too far. Now you're dealing with anxiety. You've done something maybe too far. I kind of did that when I went to California. I was kind of made a too rash of a decision.
Yeah.
But if you find the wave, if you make a decision that's slightly uncomfortable, and then you get on that wave, okay, and you allow yourself to kind of work with something that's just a little bit uncomfortable.
Right.
And you ride that, you can definitely it transforms you.
Yeah, and I think a good side note for that is the only way to find your balanced right on the cusp of the wave is because you went overextended yourself when you went to California.
Yeah, I don't. Right? Yeah, you don't have to. I think you can push it gradually. Like, I could have done a little bit, but so that's one way to do it. I'm like, because I got scared. I knew I was starting to get too comfortable.
Yeah.
And I needed it to change.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you this: would, if you could go back, with the retrospect you have now of how that California trip kind of shaped you, would you let that course of events happen again so that you could get to where you are?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't change anything about that sequence because it allowed me to be here, but I, knowing from how that went and what I went through, I know that it definitely triggered a lot of anxiety within me.
Yeah.
Now, people listening to this are, you know, might be like, okay, geez, oh, that's not good. Yeah. Okay, but at the same time, it forced me to deal with some demons that I had hiding in me, and most certainly transformed me as a person.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I think the average person who hasn't kind of gone through a process like that, there was a more measurable metric, they would believe that their max capacity, I guess, or ability to grow is about 70% of what it actually is. Their threshold for pushing themselves and being in that zone.
I would say it's even lower.
You think
that people think that they only can do 70% of what they actually can do?
Yeah, it's probably less.
The Navy SEAL, they have it's a 40% rule. That your mind wants to stop at 40% of what you're actually capable of.
Yeah, and the only way to find out what you are capable of in life is failing. If you haven't gotten to the point of failure, you have no idea what you're capable of.
You're too far in the comfort zone.
Yeah, no idea what you're capable of if you haven't fallen on your face.
Yeah. Okay. This has been a pretty candid conversation here. Thanks for doing this though, Jordan.
Thank you for having me.
What people